does the campaign, does it get you a little jittery and, okay, where we're going? I mean, does it kind of come at you from all directions?
Yes, it does. After this, I'm going to go talk to a high school class. So, it's like overwhelming sometimes. Yeah. I had the debate last night.
You know, it's kind of interesting that your party put out a press release and said, look, Paula Bradshaw, the role of spoiler and addressing that issue. And I thought it was a very well done press release.
Well, we do get accused of that a lot. It's kind of, I think, the arrogance of the two parties that think they own the voters. And I would be embarrassed if I was a political science pundit to admit that there's only a few districts in this country which are not gerrymandered enough to make sure that they return the incumbent year after year after year. You know, they're kind of admitting that there's no real democracy if they're like, there's only a few competitive districts in the United States of America. Really? And you're going to hold yourself up as a model of democracy and there's only two or three competitive districts? And then you have the nerve to get mad when someone comes in and challenges the two corporate parties?
It's interesting because this new paper, the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute, I was talking about it this time yesterday morning with Professor Redfern, the University of Illinois, and that there's a section in there that about how redistricting stifles competition. And
yes.
I mean, you just referenced a couple of moments ago, ensuring that the people in control continue to be in control. And you know what that always has indicated to me, Paula, that a fear component.
Yes.
And maybe even a guilty conscience.
Well, they I quote John McCain sometimes, who said that the American political process is the two parties competing each other to sell America off to the highest bidder. Yes, you got it right there, John McCain.
You just quoted John McCain.
Yeah. Back when he was doing the McCain-Feingold election reform, which didn't work.
So, Green Party. I mean, how do you describe it to people who are unfamiliar with you? And the Green Party. How do you do that? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I explained that it's a worldwide party because people don't realize that. It actually started in Germany in the 80s, and they didn't like corporate control of their elections, which is ironic because they have proportional representation there, which is more democratic than here. And they started this party. We don't accept corporate contributions. And it's a recognition that the planet itself is at risk. Not the planet, of course, like George Carlin said, they'll shake us off like a bad case of fleas, but the ecosystem that we depend on for our life. You know, people, I don't know, Democrats and Republicans don't seem to realize that we depend upon a certain climate, a certain amount of oxygen in the air, atmosphere. You know, we have to have water to grow our crops. We're totally dependent on topsoil and water and air, but people are so far removed from that that they don't even realize that. That if we destroy our topsoil, if we pump out all our aquifers, we're not going to be able to grow food anymore. And then all this other stuff is gone.
All right. Now, this is one of the issues that you and I have talked to before. The Green Party often equated with environmental. And so people want to marginalize that and say, well, they're only the environmental party. But so let's take a look at what people are most concerned about right now. And these new pollings, first off, 71% of America's CNN poll says they're either angry or very angry at the direction of the country. And that's not just the environment. It's a lot of different things.
Right. What people are mostly worried about is making a living. You know, there aren't enough jobs to go around in this country. There's 20 million people unemployed. And if you don't have a job, you're up the creek, right? So most people are worried about jobs. So that's what the Green Party talks about. Well, let's put people to work improving our environment, improving our infrastructure. Like you said, change happens. I tried to say that in the debate last night. We know change is going to happen. Look at the last 200 years. You know how much life has changed. We need to have a say in how the next 100 years is going to go and what kind of jobs we're going to do or what kind of work we're going to do. It seems very clear to me that we need to put people to work changing our infrastructure so that we're not on this destructive path that we're on right now.
All right. And you know, the first thing when I was listening to you talk right now, you know what the first thing that I came up with in my mind was?
What?
This country does not have an energy policy. You talked about the next 200 years. We don't have an energy policy for the next five.
Well, right, because we're dependent on fossil fuels, and fossil fuels are a limited resource. You know, that's what the oil depletion allowance is all about. Back then, they knew that the oil would be depleted, and now we live in this fantasy world where the earth is just a has a creamy nougat center of oil or something. Well, that's not true. That's why we have the extreme extraction right now. If there was plenty of oil, they wouldn't be drilling 2 miles under the Gulf of Mexico. You know, they're now like an addict, you know, tearing apart the couch cushion, looking for the last little bits. And then what? I mean, it's arrogant to future generations to say, well, we have 20 years left. If we destroy our water, if we destroy our air, if we destroy our topsoil, we'll got 20 more years of fossil fuels. What about the next generation?
You are a nurse.
Yes.
A new statistic done by a survey from a medical management company and a consulting company says that 214,524 doctors are opting out of Obamacare because the reimbursement rates are so dramatically low than the cost, they cannot take that burden on.
Well, that's part of Obamacare. I mean, they said it very clearly. If you listen, you know, the point of Obamacare is to cut the cost of health care, meaning doctors, nurses, hospitals.
But see, there's cutting the cost, and then there's just not paying the guy back who's actually got a legitimate cost, too.
Well, that's how they're cutting it.
You know, they're going to cut the cost by not giving you. And some are saying, some say 8 cents on the dollar, or 80 cents on the dollar, excuse me. And some say as little as 40 cents on the dollar with some reimbursement rates.
Well, you know, most doctors are no longer on their own anyhow. They've all given up. They're all employees just like us. They've lost their power. It makes them sad, but, you know, they're just employees like the rest of us. So there's probably not that many doctors out there still with their own practice. But of the ones that are, I guess they can go to a fee for service, or and that's not really enough because people don't have enough money to pay the bills.
To pay a $5,000 deductible.
Yeah.
You don't get any. You've got to pay the deductible first before your insurance, and that's $5,000.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You've had a 40% rate increase.
Right.
Which are people are talking 39.
Don't
and
forget
then
the
there's
co-pays.
The co-pays.
Yeah.
The solution was not a solution. It was a bigger problem. I mean,
right.
do you and I agree on that?
Oh, or? Yes, absolutely. I think that Obamacare should be abolished, and we should go to single payer healthcare and like Medicare for all. Just take away the age 65 limit and just have everybody on it. And that would cut off so much money. You know, where I work, I didn't even realize it until last year, but there are now over 400 people in management, which weren't there 20 years ago when I started this job. Back then, the management was on the first floor of the hospital where I work, and they sent me to what they call corporate headquarters. And I couldn't believe it. There was so many people there. There were.
I always assumed it was people doing code to be able to get the reimbursements.
Well, exactly. That's what they're doing. Their whole job is to micromanage everything we do, and we have to document. We have to do all the work and the documentation. And their job is to make sure that we documented the work, you know. And that's their only job, and it aggravates us.
You know, we are in a dangerous world. You've got ISIS. You've got the federal government saying this week that there's an imminent threat. It didn't use that as often as some of the others. We have to be concerned about our federal buildings. We're going to turn up the metal detector sensitivity. I mean, we're going to use. We've got, like I said, a lot of different things going on. It comes to threats. And you and this is something that you and I have never talked about, the U.S. military and the Green Party. I don't know how to go about asking it. So let's just talk about we're under a lot of threats.
Well, they rule us by fear. You know, I mean, at a certain point, I have to say, really, people, you worried about 20,000 guys 7,000 miles away who have no airplanes.
So, you know, but so you think the United States has been goaded into some of these actions by a limited number of people decapitating one guy, and then we go nuts?
Right. It's all hyped, in my opinion. You know, there's people being beheaded in Mexico right now. There's 100,000 dead Mexicans.
By the drug cartels.
If they wanted to hype fear, and I'm kind of interested to see if they do that. Will all of a sudden the Hydra, the media monster, turn its head toward Mexico and start hyping Mexico? Because that would really get people worked up. But it kind of amazes me. They rule us by fear. And in the meantime, there's a small group of people here who are gutting the United States of America. And I am more of a, come on, don't be so afraid. You know, live your life in fearlessness, and you'll have a lot happier life than being paranoid all the time. You know, when I was in nursing school, I went to the big mental hospital, and I was sitting with this guy, and he was pointing all the way across the room at this social worker talking to another patient. And he said, "You see her? She's out to get me. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get her first. I'm going to get her and I'm going to kill her. And I'm like, ew, you're creepy. And then I realized later on that that's how our foreign policy is. They point at people and go, they're going to get you. We have to kill them first. And it's like...
Or you could look at it this way. They're going to kill us. We got to get them. And we need funding.
Well, yes, indeed, because the military-industrial complex is a very well-funded thing, isn't it? And any time we start to talk about, you know, maybe we should cut it back a little bit. Like after the Soviet Union was destroyed in 1991, people were like, ooh, peace dividend. And so they had to come up with a new enemy, and they've come up with terrorism, which is really good because that's just so amorphous. They can point to terrorists anywhere. You know, there's a terrorist over there. Look,
but you do have, you've got NATO saying Russian military incursion into European airspace has us troubled. And the pilots are saying, we've never seen anything like this before. There's something going on, though, isn't there?
Well, I call that provocation. When NATO, which was formed in 1947, 48, in order to protect Europe from the Soviet Union, that's what NATO was supposed to be about. So when the Soviet Union dissolved and the Warsaw Pact dissolved, so NATO should have dissolved, too. There was no more Soviet Union. But instead, NATO moved its bases closer and closer and closer to Russia. You can see that Russia, as a matter of fact, there was an American military guy that said, Russia is moving closer to our bases. And Russia, the Russian foreign minister said, gee, we're really sorry that our country, which has been here for, you know, thousands of years, is so close to your bases.
Yeah, but what do you think that the relatives of those people that Malaysian airline flight think about that and shot down over Ukraine? Because it's very real.
Yes, that airline was shot down over Ukraine, and we had 2 weeks of intensive propaganda about it, and then it was dropped. The black boxes, the anti-fascist fighters in Donbass handed the black boxes over to Malaysia, and Malaysia handed them over to Great Britain, and we haven't seen one single thing about what happened to that plane. We were told it was Russia, and then they dropped it, and the only country that is still saying we need an investigation is Russia. So that kind of makes me wonder who really shot down that plane.
All right. Well, you and I have covered a lot of territory, but unfortunately, once again, when you and I get together, we often run out of time. So for this last couple of moments, the election next Tuesday, what would you have them know about Green Party candidate Paula Bradshaw in the 12th District and what you represent and what you want them to know when they look at those three names on the ballot and whether to put that check next to your name? Some people say it's a spoiler. Some people say it's a waste of vote. Some people say, look, finally somebody who represents me. Other people say, finally a third party. I mean, there are a lot of components that are unique to you. And what would you have them know about you before they go in the polling booth and see those three names on the ballot for the 12th district?
I pay attention. You know, I don't watch a lot of reality TV. I don't read a lot of fluff magazines. I pay attention to what's going on. And I think they need someone in Congress that pays attention to what's going on, who thinks for herself, and who wants the best for this country and the people in this country, and has ideas on how to make this country better. I have a website called Paula for Congress with a 4.org. And if anyone wants to know what I think about, you know, and my plans for the Green New Deal and the monetary reform and nonviolence and all the things that we've talked about, they can go to my website and see it.
Paula, it's always a pleasure. And
thank you.
Good luck next Tuesday.
Thank you. I'm hoping I win.
Pretty rough debate last night, huh?
Yes, it was. There was questions I was like not expecting. But, you know, I think I did okay. Like I said, I pay attention. I knew what the import-export bank was.
I understand one of the other debaters did not.
Yeah, right.
That was one of the issues, one of the first things that I read early this morning when I got up.
Oh,
so
really? Yeah.
The debate last night, it was representative of the final debate days before an election. I guess there's a good way to capsulize it, wouldn't you think?
Right. I wish there would have been three, but, you know, that same person, Mike Boss, refused to show up for the first debate. So there should have been three. We could have covered way more ground. There were things that we didn't cover that I thought we would cover. But, you know, we only had two debates, so.
All right. Thanks again, Paula.
Thank you.